happened?
We were hoping you could tell us. All we know is that Binary found her. My theory? You somehow crossed through a tear in space-time. You are now in a reality parallel to your own. Which is, of course, impossible.
Hello and welcome back to A Stark Contrast, where we discuss the differences and similarities from Marvel Comics to their MCU counterparts. And we are your hosts, Jeffrey
and Di.
Hello, hello, and welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back.
Happy X-Men 97 week.
Woo! One of my favorite weeks in a long time. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
So great.
Yes.
So much stuff.
Yes.
So much great stuff. So much great response. Like, I didn't even want to talk about it too much because we're doing a mini Marvel next.
Yeah.
And, like, we're clearly going to talk about it a lot there.
And we're going to have at
least... It's probably going to be a mini X-Men.
Yeah. And we're going to have at least 4 episodes under our belt by that time.
Yeah, by then. Maybe 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so excited. So stoked. Had me a celebration. We were supposed to record last night, but I was like, Jeff, there's an X-Men 97 like event. Can I go?
It wasn't even that. It was kind of just like at the bar, at that bar canteen. Yeah. I was like, that's random, but all right.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So my homie here was so polite to let me go live my nerd life.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, you know, it was super great to like watch it among fans,
fellow nerds,
like super duper nerds.
Oh, yeah,
and everybody, it was very similar to the fan event reactions, like, because there were people there that had not watched it yet. So like when big things happen,
oh, they hadn't watched the episodes yet.
Yeah, I'm keeping the spoilers out, but like when big moments happened, like someone was like, no. Like, you could hear the, like, I was like, oh.
Yeah.
So it felt new.
Wow.
Again.
So they saved their viewing experience until that event.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then, of course, Ms. Lenora Zan was in attendance, Rogue herself. Had some great FaceTime with her. She's absolutely amazing.
Woo!
As always. But yeah, so love it. First reaction, just love it.
Dude, that was it. Yeah. I was like, this is a really well written show.
Yeah.
The Marvel Animation Studio looks like they're starting off on a very strong,
incredibly
strong foot.
Yeah. Is What If not on the animation slate?
It didn't say, well, at least in their intro, it doesn't say Marvel Animation.
It says Studios.
It just says Marvel Studios. Mm, yeah.
Okay.
But
well, then maybe that'll change. Who knows?
Maybe. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, we'll be very excited to talk more about the show in our next episode, especially because, once again, Jeff didn't grow up in the 90s quite like some of us did.
Yeah, I was born in the 90s.
Yeah, you were
so.
Quite literally born in the 90s. So to see it and experience it and hear it from your perspective, I think will be really enjoyable for not only me, but I think everybody else. But as far as our top news goes, let's get right into it, because this is a pretty long list, all things considered. Jeff and I are finally going to go to a convention together.
Oh, yeah.
So next week is WonderCon here in Anaheim, California.
Is
so
it next week already?
It's next week already, buddy. It's already April.
Oh my God, it is. Because I put an out of office for work on that Friday.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? And I was like, oh my God, it is next week.
It's next week. Yeah. So unfortunately, like, we're only going Friday. So if by some chance you spot us and you listen to the show,
say hi.
I'll try to remember to bring some stickers or something to hand out. But yeah, we're going Friday. That's going to be super fun. We're going to miss a lot of the major panels that take place on Saturday, but you're going to get a great feel
of like a con
of what
general.
A convention is like. Yeah, especially WonderCon, because WonderCon is a baby sister show of San Diego Comic-Con.
Mm.
So yeah, it'll be a good time. Marvel Gaming is heating up for the season, not only on mobile, but beyond. Also dropping the trailer for 1943. Did you forget about this? Because I completely forgot that they were doing this.
Like, I mean, if we're being honest, like,
I just haven't thought of the name in a while.
Yeah.
Until since like they said like, oh, this is Marvel 943. I just remember being, yeah, Black Panther and Captain America.
Yeah.
So
because they had mentioned, I think they revealed it Comic-Con?
Something, I think so, because it was during strikes and everything.
That's right.
So
yeah. So when it popped up, I was like, oh.
Yeah, and, okay. And it was a full-on trailer too.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. Very excited for that.
The one thing that caught my ear was he's like, now we have you and Captain America running around, two super soldiers running around,
mm-hmm.
and then someone said like no, make that three, and that's like. Who's the third one?
Bucky.
Yeah, like who's the third one?
Well, I've been asked a question already by one of our listeners.
Oh.
Andrew Frank. And he was also like, so what do you think? You think we're going to get a little Winter Soldier? And I was like, there are two scenarios that I see that could happen. Bucky dies at the beginning of the game, and that's all we get of him. And they just call back to it in dialogue. And or... he comes in the second, third, like, portion of the game, and you have to fight him at one point, but that's it. Like, he's not going to, like, maybe won't be the big baddie, because it's going to be Red Skull. It's going to be, like, Hydra proper.
Yeah.
Because we don't really know how long it took them to even assimilate him into the Winter Soldier.
Sure.
So,
fair.
I think it's the first one. I think we're going to meet Bucky in the beginning, and then that's it.
Yeah.
And there might be another super soldier,
but
we'll see.
Oh, yeah, we'll see. It looks like it'll be fun. Can't wait to see a gameplay trailer.
And which studio is doing this? It's a different studio.
I can't remember off the top of my head. I think it was the one. I think people said it was the same
Sky something.
Something like that. The same studio that did Uncharted.
Oh, it's Naughty Dog.
And what's another game like that that's not Naughty Dog? Yeah, you know.
That's cool, though. Yeah.
I'm tweaking.
In other news, if you missed the memo, Spider Mondays are here, and you can catch each and every Spider-Man film in theaters every Monday beginning April 15th at SpideyMovies.com. I was only gonna get tickets for Spider-Man 1, 2, and Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jeff comes over here and he's like, why don't you just do them all? And I was like, no. And then I visited the site and I bought them all.
Yeah, so this is my fault.
It's totally your fault. So I have 8 Spider-Man movie tickets waiting for me. But again, the upside is, and I said this on Twitter, the tickets are only $5. So there's no crate.
Might as well.
It's like $7 a pop with the fees. And so I was like, oh, that's basically the price of 2 adult tickets for any regular movie.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Yeah.
So that's what I'll be doing every Monday. Hopefully. I don't know. I might flake on a few, but we'll see.
Before we move on, it was Skydance.
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 Ooh, I was right there. Yeah, Skydance.
Yeah. So
cool. Excited. What other games have they done?
It's a great question.
In related Spider-Man news, I don't know if you saw this. This news dropped today. The Spider Within, an all-new Spider-Verse short, debuts on YouTube. Yeah, next week. So March 27th, Variety states that Sony Pictures Animation and ImageWorks have partnered with the Kevin Love Fund to digitally release an animated short, and it'll be incorporated into a mental health-focused lesson plan related to the Spider-Verse. So I guess I didn't look at the details just yet, but I believe it's Miles, but I don't know. Maybe it's actually another spider entirely.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we'll see. So that debuts, again, March 27th. That'll be interesting. I'm curious how long it is, what the treatment will be, and if it really does just kind of nestle into the larger Sony Animation look and feel.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's super exciting. And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the last of our news for now, but... yeah, you ready to get into it?
Let's do it.
Oh, one last related bit of news. X-Men 97 is clearly streaming on Disney Plus with 2 episodes at the time of this recording, now streaming, and then new episodes every Wednesday now through May 15th. So, yeah, get ready every morning. Wake up, before you started
trying
adulting.
To make it like the
it's
the old days.
It's so good. I can't wait to talk about it more. But beyond that, just a reminder, we're not experts and we don't claim to be. We're just a couple of nerds nerding out. And in this episode, we're gonna nerd out all about Henry Hank McCoy, a.k.a.
Beast.
Woo!
Yeah, so created by the greats Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Hank's first appearance is, of course, X-Men number 1, September 1963, more commonly referred to as Uncanny X-Men. And the issue title itself, the story title, is very short. X-Men. Just X-Men. And so do you remember the cover price, Jeff, of this 1963 book?
1963.
Yes.
My God. I mean, how many times have we... I mean, just X-Men. Yeah. I'm going to go 15. 12. 12, 12, 12, 12, 12. Sorry. It's never 15.
Good call, bro.
It's never 15. I think I made that mistake on one on one other one.
That's great.
I was just like, wait, it's 10.
It's so uncommonly 15.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you got it. 12 cents right on the nose. And of course, Beast is on the cover with the rest of the classic X-Men, including Angel, Iceman, Marvel Girl, Cyclops, as well as Magneto. And so when we recorded previous episodes that involved these characters, so far Professor X and Magneto, there were copies of the issue up to compare and contrast. There are currently none up.
So
all the ones that are quote-unquote available have been bought up, and so there's nowhere you can just buy it unless you know a local store, which of course shop at your local comic book store. But yeah, there was none up when I did my research. And so on at least on Shortbox, let me correct myself. At least on Shortbox, there was none. But last time when we did an episode, there was a CGC 4.5 up for a cool $42,000.
Ew. 4.5?
For 42 grand. Yeah. And then I guess there is none currently. These are just the old stats. And on eBay, there was an 8.5 that was available for $85,000.
You guys should be putting these things on, like asking Sotheby's or something to buy it up.
Yeah. It's so wild. And so the lowest, there are, again, also none. But last time there was a CGC 1.0 for $6,000. This is not bad, not great.
It's 1.0.
But it's also X-Men number 1.
Yeah. there's one version out there that's like hanging by a page.
Yeah.
And then there's someone going to be like, how much is this worth?
Well, it's funny you say that because there is a no grade CGC on eBay for $2,000. And then someone, speaking of pages, is selling pages. Graded.
Dude, that's insane.
Graded pages of this book.
First issue?
Of the first issue.
Of X-Men?
Of X-Men.
I mean, I get it.
For $250. I mean,
it's going to be worth more once in 2 years.
Sure.
Obviously. Like once the X-Men MCU versions come out.
Oh, yeah.
Then, yeah.
For sure.
Or maybe after Deadpool Wolverine, maybe that.
Yeah, I know. Honestly, especially even now. Like, I feel like even now you can just see it surging like slowly in little increments.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying like, oh yeah, Feige's going to do the X-Men right. This is how I know they're going to do the X-Men right, because of how the 97 is looking.
Exactly. I agree. And so you could get a raw copy for about $2,000 just off the bat, but it's almost, you'll almost never find it raw.
Sure.
Almost never. And so I did see that a 4.0 sold, that was the most recent sell of this book, a 4.0 sold for $10,000 in February of this year. And so that's twice as much? No. It is far less than the 4.5.
Oh, yeah.
That was up for 42 grand. So times are changing. Maybe it wasn't, I mean, 0.5 grade is, I guess, a lot compared to what it could have been. But the book is going to only be worth more. There's no way it's going down.
Yeah.
Let's just say that.
I agree.
Yeah. So first exposure to the character.
Beast? Well, I mean, yeah, it's got to be Kelsey Grammer's.
Really?
I'm sure. Yeah, the first like X-Men. Mm. Probably mm-hmm. going. Yeah. Is it?
Second. X2.
X2.
Yeah.
Yeah, because yeah. I think, yeah, it was either X2 or mm-hmm. X3, like the first original trilogy, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
The makeup and everything. Yeah. Just the calming voice.
Which is phenomenal because as you can tell now from the animated series, it's Kelsey did a fantastic job of sort of emulating the great George Buzza mm-hmm. as he speaks in the cartoon.
Yeah.
That was like truly the first time you hear Beast talk.
Yeah.
I don't maybe he was in Spider-Man and the Amazing Friends like way back in the day, but yeah, it really resonates in a way that's like incomparable. Like it, when you think of Beast and when you hear Beast on the, when you read Beast on comic pages,
yeah,
you hear that voice. And it's just like fantastic tonality to him, but I digress. Speaking of Beast. For me, oh God, geez. I don't know.
Really?
It's a core memory, dude. Like he's so like embedded in my sure. brain
yeah.
from before. Like, cause again, that comic is so classic because even perhaps before the animated show started, like Hi-C back in the day used to slip like reprints of the comics into boxes.
Uh-huh.
And so that was also one of my first comics was like having a like sad copy of X-Men number uh-huh. one. I still have it. It's like water damaged and everything.
Oh my God.
Cause they put it in Hi-C. Like
that's fair.
Yeah.
That's
so
valid.
Sometimes they put it in the cooler and it.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And so it's a little crinkly, but I still have it. But that's the earliest memory I can remember because even so it predated the cartoon in the strangest way. Like it's not the same for Rogue.
Yeah.
Because Rogue was a, you know, more modern character anyway. But yeah, that's the earliest memory I have of him aside the trading cards. I couldn't tell you exactly when, but he's always been there, if you will. So speaking of trading cards, I have a 1992 Impel Marvel superhero set or X-Men set, I think. In the back, it's everything you need to know about Beast. And it states, as superhumanly strong and inhumanly agile in body as he is quick-witted and brilliant in mind, the mutant superhero known as the Beast continues to combat evil alongside the newly restructured X-Men, while adding both the sum of humankind's knowledge and to his ever-expanding million-dollar vocabulary. And so this one doesn't have his height and weight, but you can imagine it's probably like
huge.
5'9" and 300 pounds or sure. something. Yeah, like maybe even taller.
On the list of smartest people or heroes.
I knew you were gonna ask. He's up there.
Top 10? Top 5?
Top 10 easy for
top
sure.
Top 5?
Top 5, quite possibly. Quite possibly. Mm. Like it's definitely like Mr. Fantastic, Tony Stark, and then from there, it's like it could even be, you know, Professor Xavier, Beast, and then somebody else. But let me see. Let's see. Let's do a quick Google. Smartest characters in Marvel.
This would be a good one.
Yep. There it is. 16 smartest comic characters ranked. I believe we have done this before, perhaps in a...
forget for which one. Was it Doctor Strange something?
Maybe. Okay, here we go. Number 16, Shuri.
Okay.
15, Charles Xavier.
All right. Rapid fire it down. Yeah.
14, Riri Williams. 13, Dr. Stephen Strange.
Okay.
12, Steve Rogers. 11, the High Evolutionary. That's an interesting one. We haven't talked about him yet. 10, Peter Parker. Why okay. am I doing an accent? 9, Henry McCoy.
Oh.
Yeah. 8, Amadeus Cho. 7, Hank Pym. 6, Bruce Banner.
Oh, that's fair.
There you go. 5, that's Tony Stark. 4, Victor Von Doom.
Okay.
3, Valeria Richards.
Oh.
2, Lunella Lafayette. Wow, she's up there. And number 1, Dr. Reed Richards.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't realize, or I didn't recall that Lunella was so high. So that's Moon okay. Girl and Devil Dinosaur.
So Pedro's got to be a smart yeah. person.
So this is why the dialogue of, well, I don't know if I buy that Pedro Pascal is going to be the smartest man in the world. But who knows?
He's going to speak Spanish and everyone's going to be like, hell yeah. That's right.
Six languages.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be great. So let's dive into Hank. So Henry Philip Hank McCoy, a.k.a. Beast. So as you might recall in Professor X and Magneto, like we talked about the issue at length for both of these characters in the respective episodes we did about them. But when we first meet Hank in X-Men number one, he's one of the original students living at Xavier's Mansion along with Scott Summers, Warren Worthington III, Bobby Drake. And then, of course, they're joined by Jean Grey, a.k.a. Marvel Girl. And so... the one intriguing thing about all that is, you know, beyond what they serve you in the few panels flat about Hank's abilities, like he sweeps in and he's upside down and he's doing acrobats. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they don't elaborate why he has become the Beast. They don't elaborate how his mutation came
along. Oh, really?
They don't say any of that. They just come in and they're like, we have powers. But there's no rhyme or reason sure. why. They're just sure. mutated, you know? And so you don't get the full breadth of Hank's true origin story until 5 years later in, you know, beginning in X-Men 49. And so X-Men 49 is actually the first appearance of Polaris, mm-hmm. who is Lorna Dane, a.k.a. Magneto's other child, the green-haired one we talked about in his episode. And so it isn't in the actual main story of each of these issues alone. So it's five consecutive issues, X-Men 49 through 53. And it's not in the main story. It's actually in a sub-story that's at the end of the issue where they, for a long amount of time, actually explain the origin stories for each of these original X-Men. So with Hank, they tell the story before he's even born. And so it starts with his parents mm-hmm. and how, you know, they get married and they're, you know, they're doing their thing. That's like 50s. You would imagine it's the 40s, 50s era. And so, you know, like radioactive plants are popping up everywhere in like, you know, rural towns and such. And so that Hank's father, Norton, weds Edna, the mother. They move to this rural town and the father works for an energy plant, an atomic energy plant. And so after a near meltdown at the plant, Edna, her persistence ensures that, you know, she's like, I don't feel safe here. Mm-hmm. I don't think we should be here. I don't want you to be hurt at work. And, you know, she's constantly like on edge because Norton quite literally stopped the plant from exploding and destroying the entire radius of that city. And so, he, you know, after her, she just lays it into him like, please, we need to leave. He's yeah. like, okay, we'll leave. And so he goes and gets a normal job. They move to a regular town and then they're thankfully blessed with a child. And so the doctor, you know, as they're surprised with like, oh, we're pregnant. The doctor says, oh, you know, it's so funny when you look at the issue, like you couldn't draw a doctor more worried. The worry on this doctor's face. He's like,
sure.
You know, I don't know that your child is going to be healthy and you might die. And
that's funny.
And it's all because of Norton's work at the plant.
Yeah.
So what the doctor has essentially told them is that your sperm is radioactive.
Oh my gosh.
Your child may have a mutation or suffer in even being born. And so thankfully, their son is born without any like notable ailments. Like he's a healthy baby boy, aside from the fact that his hands and feet are enlarged. So they weren't like adult sized. They were just larger, larger than they should be for a baby of his size. And so later in time, like as early as him in his twos as yeah. a toddler, he has noticeable strength, intelligence, and acrobatic activity. And so in this origin story, I think it's the, is it the first one? It might be the first one or the second one. Hank is quite literally in his terrible twos, and he's trying to get a ball or a toy that rolls under his crib.
Mm-hmm.
And he picks up the crib, and he's like, I'm going to get you, ball. Like, you know, he's like,
hello?
It's like, oh. And so his parents are like, oh, well, okay, it could be worse. And so Hank just grows to be, after that, he just grows to be an otherwise normal human being, if you will.
Yeah.
He's just got larger hands and feet. No big deal. And so that's essentially the origin of Hank McCoy. And so we actually don't get more of his story until much later, which we'll talk about when we get there. But yeah, Henry Hank McCoy, first portrayed by Steve Bassick in 2003's X2. So do you remember this at all? I forgot this until I did research. You say
it says small TV cameo. Does that mean
yeah.
he was on a TV in yes. the movie?
Yeah. So he was on a TV in X2. And so I guess Kelsey didn't come in till X3.
Mm.
So he's like on the TV and I think it's at a bar or something. I don't remember. And it's just like Dr. Henry McCoy. Yeah, and he's human. He's still in his human form.
Interesting.
So maybe. somewhere in between X2 and 3, the mutation happens, or he was using something to guise his blue fur.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting. I totally forgot about that. And I was like, oh, that's right. And so he was otherwise portrayed by Kelsey Grammer in 2006's X-Men 3, The Last Stand.
Yeah.
And then portrayed most recently by Nicholas Hoult in 2011's X-Men First Class. But once again, last seen.
Technically, last seen.
Last seen 2023's Marvel. The Marvels portrayed by Kelsey Grammer once again, but CGI. Full on CGI.
Bigger and beefier.
Love it.
Yeah.
Because now you see it. Yeah, because
now you're like, oh, yeah, that's that's Beast.
That's Beast. It's exactly what he looks like everywhere. And it's so enjoyable. I can't get over it. Like, I haven't watched The Marvels since I saw it in theaters, but.
I rewatched it. And yeah, it's even crazier, like.
In retrospect, yeah.
And then in ultra HD.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're just sure. like, oh, that's really him. Like, he's playing with it, like, his so big, big hands with yeah. his glasses. He's yeah. like. He's like, boy, Neri found you. And I'm just like, oh my God.
I love that. Yeah, so that's absolutely fantastic. Oh, very quickly, here is the screenshots from the comic.
Oh, lifting the...
So that's him, like, just in the air. And like, yeah, and he's like... Yeah,
he's just lifting everything.
Yeah, and he's just a big little boy. And yeah, he had formidable strength all around all the time. But yeah, so in live action... Each live-action version of the character has been a bit different than the rest.
Yeah.
Not only visually, but tonally. And so Grammers is a former student of Xavier, who is now a member of the U.S. Cabinet as the Secretary of Mutant Affairs. And then Hoult is obviously playing the younger version of Kelsey Grammers, who is set in the 70s. And he's, like, you know, in an iteration of the same team, going through the growing pains and... young mutant problems and all that stuff. So it's interesting to think about it in that way because, yeah, it's not necessarily a... Hoult wasn't necessarily a reboot. He was...
A younger version.
He's a prequel.
Yeah.
In a weird way. And, of course, the latest iteration, you know, as Jeff noted, is Hank aligns with that of his comic book counterpart. It looks exactly like he does in the comics. But we're still not sure what timeline he's part of.
We don't know what universe they're in.
At all. Yeah, so that's going to be very interesting to see when they clear it up. And I do think you're right. I think it will hit us in Deadpool and Wolverine.
It might. I mean,
I think so. I mean, because Logan's already in it, so why not?
I mean, yeah, and they were in the X-Mansion.
Yeah.
So
they were very much in X-Men.
Which you don't even think about until like you see the big X circle going into Cerebro.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, wait, they're in the school. Well,
that's the exact moment that I freaked out. when we watched
When you saw the...
When I saw the background, I was like, oh my gosh.
Like, they're in the mansion. They're in underground.
The mansion, yeah. the mansion that we're all familiar with, and which is, of course, carried over between both sets of X-Men. So...
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like, okay, so maybe it is straight up Foxverse, because that's the... The big deal, right? Like, this is the whole premise of Deadpool and Wolverine.
So much free reign MCU has now.
Can't wait. It's going to be awesome. And so, first of, I believe, two pop quizzes. Are you ready?
No.
This one's tricky. I mean, not tricky. It is a kind of tough question, but do you remember why they're called X-Men?
What? That's like the most like deep philosophical reason.
Yeah.
That's like asking, do you know why you're alive? Like, what?
Yeah.
Why they are called X-Men, which is also, it's a valid question.
Yes.
Charles Xavier's children?
That's not a bad assumption, because most people would probably be like, Xavier.
Sure.
X-Men.
Yes.
And so this was actually a point of contention for like X-Men Evolution, because in X-Men Evolution, I think it was Storm, somebody very distinctly said Xavier. They didn't say Xavier. They said Xavier.
Ah.
And I was like, it's Xavier because of X-Men. But that's not entirely the reason. It is partially the reason.
I'll take partial.
Partials, yeah, you get partial credit for that.
I'm a partial kind of guy.
The official version, and he says it in the first issue of X-Men, is that they're called X-Men because they have something extra special that makes them extraordinary. Therefore,
fair. They have X-Men. That X factor in
exactly.
them.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's another team.
X-Factor. Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So that's essentially why.
Oh.
Yeah.
The more you know.
The more you know. So we can jump into aesthetic right off the bat after that.
Big blue guy.
Big blue guy. And so you can see, Jeff, there are not only four. There are five pictures on this document.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he rolls over. But first, yes, Beast, as an adult, he's just, you know, big, broad guy.
Kind Brolic. Of
like a what you would imagine Ron Swanson would look like, but not quite.
Honestly?
Right?
I see it.
You see it, right?
It's like, yeah, it's Ron Swanson's juiced up brother.
Yeah, like
who's
burly.
From Jersey.
Yeah,
Jersey. Yeah, it's from very specific, but
yeah.
If you saw... You would probably get it.
Yeah, exactly. And so that was the original Hank, and he had a couple of suits before he turned into Big Blue later on. And I believe it was Amazing Adventures number 11. And I have the cover here for you. And so we'll talk about that in a second. But yes, this is the first issue that he is actually furry.
He is gray.
The Beast. He's notably gray, which we're going to discuss shortly. And so, of course, the second picture on our doc, Jeff, is the classic Jim Lee, the baby blue, the blue-looking Beast.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, Kelsey Grammer and Nicholas
That's how
Holt.
He looked?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Kelsey Grammer for sure in that makeup.
Yeah, right? You can tell. And then Nicholas Holt, a little more kitten and wolf-like.
That's what he... What?
Yes.
I gotta rewatch all these movies again.
You still haven't done it yet. No, well, if you have to choose one.
Well, I think he looked like, I thought he looked a little bit different. But
who?
Nicholas Holt. Nicholas Holt's
he
version.
He did a little bit, I think, in the second one.
But I also remember him being not the Beast in a lot of those movies.
No, they were like money shot. They needed his real face.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get it. But also, come on. But yeah, if you have to pick between watching X-Men the Animated Series or binging the movies, watch the series.
Copy.
And then, of course, as we scroll down, the adorable version that we've been introduced
to. Dude, he looks so good.
He looks so good.
Wow.
He's so cute and adorable and like you just want to
They
like,
kept that him. Really well hidden, man.
Right?
Like,
holy
I was not
crap.
Expecting that.
Honestly.
That post-credits scene.
No, not at all. I was like, well, they're not going to do... Holy crap! And then it was Beast.
And like, he's like big, brolic chest.
Yes.
Shoulders.
He's perfect.
Wide face. small glass, this small square rectangular glasses.
I love him.
It's so fun. It was so fun. Good. I was like, oh my God, that's him.
Yeah.
And I was like, is that Kelsey Grammer?
It's so good. And then, yeah, to have the voice be Kelsey Grammer on top of that is like, oh God, it's just so perfect. And so actually I wanted to read a caption that that the lead character designer of X-Men 97, Amelia Vidal, had posted not too long ago on her Instagram account.
Uh-huh.
And she's essentially posting all of the main pictures that she designed for the characters. And then for Beast, she put, "For the design of Beast, in addition to reinforcing his anatomy, I wanted to preserve his dual appearance, in which he can look threatening when fighting, but in his normal appearance, his face must look friendly."
Yeah.
Which I think is very consistent with the Marvel's version.
Yeah.
Where you can see, like, again, I want to hug him. And yeah. be like, oh, Beast, but you know that he could also turn.
Yeah.
And, like, rip.
It's even like what I got when I started the 90s X-Men 97.
Yeah.
And in that first scene that you see Beast when he's waking up, that
Roberto da Costa.
Roberto da Costa.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's Beast. He has his calming, you know, voice. Yeah. But yeah. You're kind of like, oh, this guy's still a.
Yeah.
He's a big beast. He's a beast.
He's a beast. Yeah.
But yeah, I really like the Marvel's version. I was so sick.
Yeah, it's quite honestly Jim Lee's version brought to life, because, like, as you can quickly see between Kelsey Grammer and Nicholas Hoult and the Marvel's version, is that, like, you know, when they were just doing the prosthetics and the makeup, the hair is like, sure.
Yeah.
It's like a dude that's like moderately furry when it comes to Kelsey Grammer, but he's still Kelsey Grammer. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, it's not quite as beastly as you would really want him to be.
Yeah.
But it's obviously something of the times. Like, they probably couldn't have pulled this off 10, 20 years ago.
Oh, man.
Like, you know, he would have looked not great.
It would have cost so much money.
And so much
for weight. It to look like that.
Absolutely. And so realistic, too. So for them to bring back Kelsey Grammer to do the mocap for it, I'm just like, oh. That's fantastic.
He did the mocap too?
I thought I
he
believe did
the
so.
Voice. Damn, I think really?
I think so. Oh, yeah. Because
cool.
he doesn't have to do anything.
Yeah, yeah. No, seriously. That's like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did. And so it's particularly fantastic because it perfectly pairs, like you said, the mannerisms. Like, he has the mannerisms and he's still very much Beast, even with his voice. And so it's a wonderful nod to again, you know, George Buzza
yeah.
and the Jim Lee version put together in real life. And so, listener question before we continue with the aesthetics, because it is a big factor of Beast, obviously. Super fanboy guy.
Hey.
You can only keep one. 1960s Beast, the animated series Beast, Nicholas Hoult's Beast, or Fraser Beast, as he called him. Frasier.
I see why.
Yeah.
That's valid.
That's valid. It's fine.
I am not qualified to answer this question. So, die.
Ah. If it's the Marvel's Beast, then Frasier Beast. For sure.
Sure.
But, if I have to pick one and only one, animated series.
Okay.
He is perfection. Perfection.
It's valid.
Who else can, like, recite William Blake?
True.
So eloquently.
I am going to have to watch that.
He does a lot. I tried to find a list of all of the poets, because Beast is a huge fan of literature.
Yeah.
As he would be.
As and, one is.
And quite literally, almost every other episode, he quotes somebody. Somebody.
I believe it.
And he does it so well. And he did it in episode one, I think. He quoted somebody.
He did. Yes.
He did. And so it's something that he does. And again, George Buzza is just the most fantastic iteration. And I'm so glad that they're adapting that version in live action. So yeah, let's bring it on. And so as far as Hank's appearance does go, he is of anthropoid/simian physique. With genius level intelligence, which is anthropoids are beings that resemble a human, the latter referring to something resembling monkeys or apes. So he's a cross between the two of those factors, which does, you know, justify why he looks like he does currently, if you will. He's human. He has human characteristics, but he does also have some, you know, ape-like features, if you will. And especially, again, he's broad and his grips are huge. He has huge paws, but not paws, they're hands, but, you know, very ape-like. But it is worth saying that Beast wasn't always blue, as Jeff pointed out on the issue of Amazing Adventures number 11. And so that story is in part when Beast essentially graduates from the Institute and he decides to go out and make something of himself beyond the X-Men. And so he joins this corporation called the Brand Corporation. And he was working on this material, the solvent that could temporarily grant any human a mutation or a mutant power. Mm-hmm. And so it was essentially created to last only with the intention of only lasting for an hour. And so he caught wind that his superior was plotting against him and he decided, okay, I've created this concoction and I can't fight against them as myself. Because then he was like worried that, oh, my identity is going to be given away. Because he doesn't have the X-Men suit. He can't hide, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he thinks, oh, but if I take the mutation, perhaps I will become a true Beast.
Oh.
And they won't know it's me. And then when I'm done,
yeah,
I'll change back to normal with the antidote. And so he takes this concoction he's created and he sprouts the fur, and then he's more beastly and he's like, okay, I can do it. And then so he takes on this, you know, the people, the security guard or whatever, but he realizes that time moves differently in his new mutation. And so for him it feels slow, but it's actually rapid in human time, and he has lapsed the hour and trapped himself as the Beast. Literal Beast, and the antidote does not work after the hour. So he's stuck in the furry phase.
Damn.
Yeah, and so that's how that came to be, and it was in fact gray at first. There's no real rhyme or reason as to why it turned blue. I think it was more of a visual thing.
Sure. Yeah.
Because his popping is blue. Like gray would be like, gray. But blue is great. But yeah, this whole thing, the pointed ears, the sharp teeth, the gray fur, it's something that they similarly depicted in the films with Nicholas Holt. I don't remember which film it was, but it might have been First Class, honestly. But yeah, he's tinkering around in his little laboratory and he did something and he was like, poof, he was blue. So yeah, they carried that over pretty well. Hank himself has also undergone many transformations in the comics, not only regressing back to his human form, but also the complete reverse. And so he's experienced some secondary mutations, influencing a more cat-like, beast-like look, depending on the story and the artist. And so, like, there is a moment in time, I think it was the early 2000s or 10s, where he straight up looks like a cat man. And he has different color fur, like perhaps even white fur, I think on one cover, but full on, like, I don't know if this is probably way beyond your understanding or remembering, but there was a show back in the day, I think in the 70s or 80s, and it had Linda Hamilton.
Okay.
From Terminator 2 fame, and she was on a show called Beauty and the Beast.
Oh.
And the Beast in that show looked like a very lion cat looking beast,
uh-huh,
which is what beasts look like at one point. And so again, depending on who drew him, sometimes he would be a little more monkey. Sometimes he'd be a little more just beastly, if you will, than straight up cat. But they've pulled it back. They've dialed it back and he's back to what the people know, in more or less in the comics. And so, another fun fact about his appearance, Wikipedia notes that Grammer's makeup took nearly 3 hours to apply.
Jeez.
And it involved applying latex prosthetics before painting his eye area and lips blue, applying various hair pieces and wigs, and a muscle suit covered with a hand-punched fur suit. So
I believe it.
Yeah, apparently Nicholas Holt's makeup took 4 hours.
Jeez.
Which is kind of crazy.
How'd it take longer?
How did it take longer? Yeah, I'm like, huh, okay. But yeah, I didn't much love Nicholas Holt. I thought he looked a little goofy.
I don't remember it that much, and I've watched Days of Future Past.
Yeah,
a lot.
I think where they missed the mark with Holt was that he was always wearing something, which of course was to make it easier for Nicholas.
Sure.
But he's wearing the suit, and so it's quite literally his arms and his head. Whereas
and it's
with
like
Kelsey,
fur popping out type of thing.
Yeah, whereas with Kelsey, like he just had a vest, and sure. you could see his broad chest and stuff. So yeah, I don't know. But in related news to his aesthetic, we did conduct a listener poll across the board on all of our social media asking who they preferred, Kelsey Grammer or Nicholas Hoult. Did you have any idea? Did you look at them?
Oh, I didn't get a chance to.
Yeah, so every single place that we posted the poll, Kelsey Grammer won. And so it was like 60-40 on, I think, Instagram. But everywhere else is 80-20.
I'm pretty sure it's like it's the voice. Like it's
the voice makes everything.
Yeah.
It really does.
Like it's Kelsey's voice.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic voice. Especially for this character.
Yeah. I agree.
So powers and paraphernalia. Yeah, what you see is what you get when it comes to Beast. Superhuman strength, speed, stamina, durability, agility, reflexes, senses, and dexterity, as well as a regenerative healing factor. Minor pheromone manipulation.
Pheromones?
That's how he gets the ladies.
That's hilarious.
And razor sharp claws and fangs. And so he's, of course, also genius level intellect, excellent in hand-to-hand combat, and a master tactician. And so the interesting thing about his genius level intellect is that there's no true clarification on whether that's part of the mutation or not. Or if he's just a straight up genius because he was born that way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's pretty consistent in the live action and in Fox vs. MCU. Though it seems less cool for now. But I think he's going to surprise us. Hopefully we'll get some real action.
Hope so. Like we need him running through, jumping on things, wall climbing.
Please.
Slashing faces.
get
real crazy.
Oh my god, I would love to see that. Like straight up beast mode?
I mean, you got to.
Straight up beast mode. Yeah. Oh my gosh. At least once.
At least.
While you know, quoting William Shakespeare.
Exactly. It's like while he's climbing the walls, as the great Shakespeare said.
I knew him well.
Slash. Exactly. Yeah. Like imagine. I mean, look, it could happen, but imagine like Deadpool running into like Beast.
Oh my gosh. Like, oh my god. Every time you bring up Deadpool, I'm like, god, dream scenarios.
Literally anything can happen. I don't know. Like, yeah. Like I said, I have no idea.
I can already hear like a butthole waxing joke.
Yeah.
Like something. Yeah. Ridiculous.
So I'm ready.
Yeah. So good. So, family, friends, and affiliations. Right off the bat, like we mentioned up top, Norton and Edna McCoy. Yeah, that's essentially all they show of the parents is in those flashback stories. We don't get much more of them. They do have subsequent appearances later along in time, and they're both listed as still alive. Mm-hmm. So they're in the ether somewhere, but they're definitely not in his life as much as they perhaps could be, if you will. They're just not that important anymore. They've kind of lived out their purpose. Definitely no live action counterparts, so I doubt we'll ever see them either. They're not super duper important aside the fact that they are his parents and they're probably otherwise great people. This section is particularly short because it's just too much to go through,
uh-huh.
especially when we talk about the X-Men.
Sure.
So
they're all one big happy family.
Exactly. Is that your like mid-Roku?
Dude, honestly, tried it, didn't like it.
Do it again.
No, I can't do it now.
Have Lenore critique it.
Me? A Southern Belle impression?
Come on.
I can't even.
Please. Please.
No, I can't even do it. I can't even, like, find the inflections to, like, get it through my mouth. To be like.
What if we do Sandy Cheeks? I'll be there faster than.
See, I can't even do that. I'm just not good at Southern accents.
Not at all, really.
I don't. No, not
one big happy family.
See, that's like way more that's graceful. Mm. If I do it, it might just come off like, are you, you're like...
redneck?
Like, no, just like you're racist.
Oh, no!
That's probably like I'm trying to like make fun of them, but
sure.
I'm not.
Yeah, no, no, for sure.
It's just like...
No, I get you.
I can't.
Yeah, no, no, for sure.
Well, yeah, I can't do it. I was about to try it. I was like, no, I'm not going to do it.
So, from the tangent of inflections.
Yes.
So, yeah, big, giant family. Do you have any, I mean, gosh, do you even, can you even, have you even seen enough material to formulate like some of your favorite moments between Beast and the X-Men?
Oh, no.
Because I feel even in the films, they isolated him quite a bit. Like, quite honestly, the Marvels is like such a fantastic version and example that I would almost say that.
I think the thing that came to mind, like right as you said that, was a moment, it was when in Days of Future Past, when Wolverine goes to the school when he first goes back in the 70s, and it's Nicholas Holt, and then he's like, "Oh yeah, where's the professor?" And then they're not a school anymore, so he so Nicholas Holt is like, "I don't know what you're talking about." And Wolverine's like, "Look, bub," and then so that's like what I can think of. And then he throws Hank, and then he jumps, and then Hank jumps at Wolverine, And then,
Who are you?
I'm Hank. Hank McCoy. I look after the house now.
You're Beast? So where's the professor?
There's no professor here.
You're pretty strong for a scrawny kid. Come on. You sure there's not a little Beast in there?
Professor!
They always had, like, a little undercut of, like, a lion roar.
And then he's like, and then he never, like he, especially in Days of Future Past, he never wants to get out of his human body.
Sure.
And he's like, like, and then Wolverine's always like,
Yeah, that's true. It's, there's a lot from the animated series for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Just because he has such great relationships with them in the series. And, you know, they do allude to the whole Fab Five thing. So he is particularly closer with, you know, Cyclops and Iceman and Jean and whatever. Iceman's not in it as much, nor is Angel, but yeah, with Jean and Cyclops. And also, of course, Aurora. Like, he and Aurora get along really well because, you know, despite her being Storm and him being Beast with, like, very active names, they're two of the most calm characters that there possibly could be.
Mm-hmm.
So they work very well together. But yeah, I love his relationships in the animated series, both the new and old. As well as Evolution, for that matter, anywhere that he's in the capacity of his comrades, if you will, his colleagues, he's always great. He's always a great like mediator and peacekeeper and voice of reason for the most part. And I think they carried it over well in the films. He's definitely more, because we saw so much of Nicholas Holt compared to Kelsey Grammer. It's, we have to remember, it's a younger version. So it's kind of like, I would almost liken him to the Beast without the hair.
Sure.
So a bit more tame, a bit more wild.
Yeah, and maybe like not able to control his powers that well.
Spontaneous.
Yeah.
A bit more raucous, if you will.
Like, he doesn't know if he'll go back to his human form if he goes full into his Beast form.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So yeah, I do enjoy the animated version more just simply because he is in it more. But yeah, hopefully we will see a lot more of the on-screen version with Kelsey Grammer.
Woo!
And CGI. So are you ready for your second pop quiz?
Sure.
So this one's a multiple choice.
Oh.
It is comic book based.
Okay.
But multiple choice. So of the following teams, which was Beast not a member of?
Of course.
In the comics. And so, as a founding member of the X-Men, he has not only left the X-Men, but he's also joined multiple teams.
Uh-huh.
Because, again, one of the top intellects. So he's viable anywhere he goes.
Yeah.
And so he has jumped books and joined different teams before. So, of these choices, which one was he not actually a part of? Avengers, Midnight Suns, The Defenders, The Illuminati, or Sword?
Oh. See, my gut automatically deduced, because he's smart.
Yes.
that he is part, like, he, like, because, like, a sword, they do a lot of research and all that. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming they wanted to use his intellect for sword.
Mm-hmm.
And the other, what was the one before that?
Illuminati.
Illuminati. Like, he's also, like, but he's not, like, magical like that. But he is smart.
He's wiggling his fingers for the record.
But he's... I mean, well, Reed Richards and the Illuminati, so I'm in.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm telling you, Jeff, and I said this to somebody the other day, I was like, Jeff has come such a long way with his comic book knowledge. And the fact that you can even say that, I'm like, chef's kiss. He's learning.
But like Midnight Suns, like that's like, that's the Moon Knight, right? Mm-hmm. That's like the god type,
god tier,
god like, type, god like type the, powers.
Yeah,
like you almost have to like, get, you have to be part of like a ritual or something. I don't know.
They're like, I would even call them like the gothy ones, the goth kids.
Yeah, emo goth kids who hate their parents. So when you said Midnight Suns, for some reason my gut said that because the other choices are Avengers and Defenders. That's like a like, see, this is me. This is why me being in like only the physical, like digital media, I'd be like, of course he wasn't. Like, look, have you seen that team? You think Beast would be in that?
Yeah.
you think Beast would join those people? I don't know. Maybe in the comics they did.
Yeah.
So I'm either saying, watch, it's going to be Avengers and I'm going to lose it. Because obviously, like, that sounds like, yeah, him as an Avenger, sure.
Sure.
It sounds right.
Mm-hmm.
But is it? I don't know. Now I'm talking myself into an answer because I thought I was so confident.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, what's it called? That's like the dark horse Avengers.
Because
my heart says Midnight Suns. But my gut says Defenders. So but the dark horse is Avengers.
What's your final answer?
I'm going to go Midnight. No. I just don't see it. Like, because it's not like he's werewolf. Like he's not a werewolf. Like werewolf and Midnight Suns would be like, yes.
Right.
Because yeah, duh. Mm-hmm. But they can't have two furry guys.
Two furries in
yeah,
one
yeah, just that's just like, no. Yeah. Everyone, every group has a token.
Sure.
Whoever.
Mm-hmm. Final answer?
I'm going Defenders.
Defenders?
No, don't do that!
No, I just want to make sure I heard right.
Yes.
Jeff.
Oh, pain.
Jeff.
Pain.
You were right the first time!
Avengers? Or Midnight Suns?
Midnight Suns.
Ah,
so close. I still want to give it to you. So, it goes without saying that each team, like kind of what I led in with, is that even though people depart teams, they fill in the gaps.
Yeah.
So, for instance, originally the Avengers had 6 seats at their quote-unquote table.
Yeah.
And they were always filled. No matter if Hawkeye left, they would then put somebody else in, et cetera, et cetera. So all these teams revolved and had a revolving door in some manner. And so Avengers, he was in. Defenders, he was in fact in. Defenders, you have to remember, is not only Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
You know, and all of them. That's one of the most modern versions of it. But at one point, I'm pretty sure Angel, Beast, and Iceman were all Defenders with other folks, like, you know, like the CB tier heroes.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you're dead on with Illuminati and Sword. Like, yeah, he's very viable with both of those factions. But Midnight Suns, that's the only one that he has not actually been a part of.
Mm.
And he's been part of more teams than that.
Yeah.
He's been on at least 10 or something. But yeah, you were so good though. Yeah. You're right there. Wow. It was great. Ah, oh, you just did suck yeah, with your, well, your heart.
Life goes on. This is why I'm an overthinker.
You did great. You did great. So, love interests.
Ooh.
I wanted to give honorable mentions for Linda Donaldson, Vera Cantor, and Patricia Trish Tilby. Vera Cantor they met and begun dating in Hank's early days after double dates with Iceman and his then girlfriend Zelda, breaking up after Hank graduated from the Xavier Institute. And so, again, we mentioned this very briefly in our Rogue episode. Iceman has come out of the closet since the olden days, and so he used to be a little bit like Johnny Storm in a way, where he would just be like, "Hey, ladies," and just date groups of women.
Sure.
And so Hank got into the dating pool thanks to Bobby because he was, you know, a wingman of sorts. Then there's Linda Donaldson, who was a coworker and lover to Hank McCoy when he first changed into his furry form. She makes an appearance in the very issue that he becomes his furry self. And if you follow the continuity of that, it ends up being revealed that she was actually this Agent 9 that took out his superior in the company. So she was basically a double agent. And then Trish. So Trish Telby. Trish was dating Hank just before his second mutation popped up. So pre-furry. And then... so Trish Telby was a public figure of sorts. I believe she was a newscaster or something in the industry. So she was dating him before he turned furry. The minute he turned furry, she stayed with him because he was still Hank. Underneath it all, she was still Hank. But then she got accused of bestiality. Straight up bestiality.
Oh my gosh.
They brought that into the comics. And then she was like, "Ooh, I don't like that. So we can't be together anymore." And she broke up with him.
Wow.
So yeah, so that's messed up. Poor Hank. So yeah, none of those characters have live action counterparts. I wouldn't see any necessity for them anyway. But, but yeah, they haven't even been used for sub characters at all. But there is one who is very prominent on screen, but in the comic book, Raven Darkholm, Mystique, no connection at all.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's nothing. There's nothing there. The fact that they're both blue is pretty much it, but they don't even interact that much. Mystique, again, shapeshifter, yeah. She's a dangerous woman, and they don't much interact whatsoever. But in the now dubbed MCU, Foxverse, whatever you want to call it, Raven Darkholm, Mystique, first portrayed by Rebecca Romijn and last portrayed by Jennifer Lawrence. So he definitely had no romantic link when it was Rebecca behind the helm, but full-fledged romance with Jennifer Lawrence's Mystique, which is so crazy to me to this day. And so again, like I think I said this in our Rogue episode, that as great as First Class is, as a fan who is familiar with the lore, I would audibly react in the theater because I was like, what?
Did you think it was like forced?
It was very forced to me because it was like Fox being like, we have these characters that we've used before.
Sure.
Let's just bring her back, you know, and, you know, some weird masculine necessity to see Jennifer Lawrence almost naked. Probably played into it in some way, but whatever sells the seats, I guess.
Yeah.
And so it felt forced to me, like the whole, like we covered this in Professor Xavier episode, that Charles and Mystique, they didn't have that origin story at all. They weren't siblings. None of that was consistent. Mm. The only thing that was consistent at all remotely was the fact that she and Magneto worked together in a Brotherhood of Evil Mutants.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much it. So when they rolled out the carpet for a romance with Beast and Mystique, I was like, what's happening here? Like, what's actually
this
happening?
This makes no sense.
It's very bizarre. But it is fine. I got it. They had chemistry. They were dating in real life. So I guess that makes sense.
So forget about that.
Yeah, they dated because of the film. Of
sure. course,
but they were together for a bit.
As one does.
Yeah. And so the two clearly had feelings for one another, though I don't remember them acting upon it. So, like, there was always, like, a tension, but they didn't really get into it until, like, maybe Days of Future Past and then Dark Phoenix, like, full force.
Okay.
Nevertheless, Raven, at one point, attempted to get Hank to run away with her. And then he's like, I can't leave the X-Men. The people, what does he say? Like, people need the X-Men.
Yeah, people need, yeah, sure.
Yeah, and so he was like, no, and she's like, fine, bye. And then, of course, In their last moment of togetherness, Raven tells Hank that she loves him before she dies at the hands of a Phoenix Force-possessed Jean Grey.
Yeah.
That was a big rip. I honestly couldn't believe that actually happened.
Oh, like them killing Mystique?
Straight up like 5 minutes into the movie. I was like, whoa.
That they did.
And pretty brutal. Which, of course, sets course for Hank throughout the rest
pretty
of the
much,
movie.
Yeah.
He's just pissed off. And
yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, other than that, there isn't much actual consistency between his love interests in the films and the comics. But he does have some in each respectable column. Notable adversaries. So this was an interesting one to tackle because, again, in live action, you don't... Like, Beast doesn't have direct adversaries.
Yeah. It's like whoever the X-Men are facing.
Yeah.
in that moment.
Exactly right. And so I wanted to at least mention Orlando Furio, a.k.a. the Conquistador.
Oh, my gosh.
Conquistador.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is actually... This is Hank's earliest adversary, and it predates his time with the X-Men. So this is what I was referring to near the top of the show, where it was the telling of his origin. And so further along the story, after you get past the portions of Hank being a baby and acclimating to his, you know, mutation, so to speak, they do take you straight into Hank as a teenager. And of course, he's a scholar. He's a bookworm. He is friends with other intellects and you know, similar people. And so they first show him walking with a girl. You know, he's got books in his hands.
Yeah.
And the football team is on the field and they're practicing. And the coach is really laying into the kids and like, you guys have to train better and blah, blah, blah. And so he essentially wants to teach them that, like, he could get a better team, so to speak. And so for whatever reason, he looks to Hank, he sees Hank walking by and he goes, you come here. And Hank's like, oh no, I don't play football. Like I would rather not. And the coach is like, no, here, toss this ball. I don't know why J. Jonah Jameson's guy.
Yeah.
Damn it.
just a natural
but
voice.
But he's using that tone, sure. Right? And so he tells Hank to throw the ball, into which Hank throws the ball at, you know, I don't know the terms, but the dude runs for it and he like catches it and he's like, oh, and the coach is like, oh, you know,
yeah.
He's no idea.
I know exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. He's no idea. This kid has powers. And then he says, okay, kick the football. Give me your best shot. And he kicks it and it straight up pops, or it goes like a
mile away.
It goes far.
Yeah,
yeah. It's the whole, you can see it in your head so perfectly. It's straight out of Spider-Man, you know?
Yeah.
And so the coach then, like, not makes him, coerces Hank to join the team.
Sure.
And it actually brings Hank a lot of joy because
he's part of something. Yeah.
He's part of something. He's getting recognition in a positive way to his mutation.
Yeah.
To something that he thought was like actually going to ruin his life. And so he becomes this fantastic football star. And, very famously, at least in a small town, famous enough that he's on TV and he's featured as like this wonder of sports. And the Conquistador is like this guy who's quite literally dressed as a conquistador. He's got a cape and he's got like armor. And it's just like, guys, what are we doing here? But again, 70s, whatever this
sure.
was published. And so he has this, like they all do, he wants world domination.
Of
and
course.
He has to get his hands on this very specific piece of technology, but it's almost impossible. It's a very Indiana Jones situation where it's surrounded by lasers
of
and
course.
You can only come in through one entry. It's every trip you can imagine.
Yeah.
And so he sees this Hank McCoy and his ability and how open he is about being able to do these acrobatics. And he's so efficient with it. And so he has this harebrained idea. He's like, I'm going to concoct this plan to get this juvenile.
Sure.
And use him to get the technology I need for my quest for world domination as the conquistador. And so, thanks to this on the other side of the state or whatever, thanks to this new machine built by Professor X called Cerebro. The X-Men sweep in to save the day. They're able to detect, oh, there's a mutant in this area. Let's go get him, as they do. And then by the end of the battle, Hank becomes one of the team. He joins the team. So they take on Conquistador, and he has, you know, like, you read the issue, and again, like, Hank does do it because Conquistador takes his parents hostage.
Okay.
And so he threatens him, like, if you don't do this, I'll kill your parents. And so Hank does it. The X-Men come, save the day, and then he's so grateful that he's like, I'm going to join your team. And the X-Men essentially MIB the town, and they wipe their memories. Jean or the professor wipes all their memories and knowledge of Hank becoming a football star.
Damn.
They just know that somebody did, but they don't know it's Hank.
Damn.
And so his parents don't know nothing. They're just like, oh, you're going off to this institute. Okay, bye, son.
Wow.
And he joins the X-Men.
Wow.
Yeah, and so that's where it went back to the square one of where we started with X-Men number one. And so, yeah, unfortunately for us, there is no live-action counterpart of Conquistador. And I don't think they'll ever make him. That seems like a big stretch. He's very tropey. But yeah, you know, while Hank has X-Men Avengers adjacent adversaries in the comics, damn well near or over 600 adversaries in the comic books alone.
My gosh.
Yeah, the rest of these we'll mention on the film side just for the hell of it, since they're not beast skewing. So
yeah,
he at least interacted or was in the film proximity with William Stryker, portrayed by Brian Cox in X2, Danny Houston in X-Men Origins Wolverine, and then John Hellman in X-Men Days of Future Past and Apocalypse. Quick refresher. William Stryker was a mutant hater, military man, turned evangelist in the comics. Stryker sought Xavier's Cerebro technology and wanted to use it for mutant genocide.
Love Eek. That. Yeah, totally
crazy.
Normal.
Yeah, totally normal.
That guy hates mutants.
Oh, yeah, terrible. Which, also, plot twist, his parents in the comics, mutants.
Of course.
Right? That's how it happens.
It's usually how, yeah, exactly how happens. It is.
Yeah. Fun fact, IGN ranked Stryker number 70 on their top comic book villains of all time list.
Number 70, as in like top 100?
Probably.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Crazy. I was like, okay. And then there was the Hellfire Club, portrayed by Kevin Bacon as Sebastian Shaw, Jason Fleming as Azazel, Alex Gonzalez as Riptide, January Jones as Emma Frost, and Zoe Kravitz as Angel Salvador. First and last seen in 2011's X-Men First Class. 2011. Jeez, Louisa.
That's 13 years ago.
That's almost 15 years ago. Almost.
It's kind of gross.
That's so wild. Wow. Yeah, so they were the Hellfire Club, both in the comics and as well as on screen, a global social club for wealthy elites. Its clandestine inner circle seeks to influence the world events for their own agenda. Yeah. That's pretty real. And then there was also Bolivar Trask, portrayed by Peter Dinklage, first and last seen in 2014's X-Men Days of Future Past. And he famously invented the Sentinels, and in the comics boasted he had the highest kill count of mutants.
Look, I will say, dude, those Sentinels in that movie.
Yeah.
I remember watching that movie in theaters.
Which ones? The future Sentinels that were like T-3000? Oh, yeah. Scary.
I was like, because that's how the movie started, by the way.
Yeah.
First of all,
yeah.
Days of Future Past. Yeah. It's like, you know, the X-Men in hiding and everything.
Yeah.
Sentinels coming.
Yeah.
And they can adapt to
yeah.
all of your powers. And I was just like,
awful.
Are they gonna murder every single X-Men at the start of this movie?
Yeah, I was like, ooh, this is dark.
I was like, these guys are, they ain't no joke. And so, so that's coming from me. That was my first. That was my first introduction to Sentinels.
Interesting. Yeah.
That's why. So then, when I saw the first episode
of
X-Men 97, the very first of the original.
Oh yes,
that's the only episode I've watched.
Night of the Sentinels. Part
yeah,
one. Yeah.
So then I was just like, Oh, and I was like, oh, it's a Sentinel Pro. And I was like, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, it's all and, coming together.
And the old Bolivar Trask mm-hmm. thing. I was like, yeah, all my homies hate Bolivar Trask.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, in X-97, speaking of, the first and second, oh, the second episode more so, Master Mold and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all. It's all the same
part of the
program.
Sentinel program,
and so he just keeps it, obviously, like as technology does, it kept advancing, and of course, in the future and Days of Future Past, they were able to concoct this crazy, like you know, it got everybody's DNA, every possible version of a
mutation.
It's
like an insane,
super scary,
yeah,
they were scary, and they were like, God, I don't quite remember, but they had that head. That didn't really have a head, and it like
dude, that was scary. Yeah. I was like, oh my god, I'm like,
so many people got stabbed.
I was like, I'm legitimately like scared of these.
It's
guys.
Uncomfortably scary.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And it was great, great depiction though. But yeah, so Bolivar was very proud of the fact that he. I was almost gonna make this a pop quiz question for you, but his kill count, his mutant kill count. Is 16,521,618. Very specifically in the comics.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of people
that
he has killed just for being mutants, for the record.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you know, as we just said, the Days of Future Past version, my goodness, bleak. Bleak.
Yeah, I hated that guy. I hated Peter Dinklage in Days of Future Past.
He was
Past.
So good. He was, and I remember there, of course, being the fanboys, why is Peter Dinklage, you know, portraying him? But who was it? I think it might have been Bryan Singer. Somebody that was directing or producing made a fantastic point in that Peter Dinklage, no matter what this man's stature is physically, his presence
is big.
Big.
Yeah.
Huge. Like formidable presence, especially in his voice. Which again, he is a Shakespearean stage actor. Like he is fantastic.
He has presence.
Tremendously talented, yeah. And so what he brought to the table as Bolivar Trask in Days of Future Past is so phenomenal.
Yeah, well, you hated the guy.
Right. Yeah,
hated him.
Yeah, you wanted him to like cease to exist.
Yeah.
And he did a fantastic job of that character that is truly so hateable. So yeah, cheers to Peter Dinklage, just not the character so much. And then the most honorable of mentions for, last but not least, Jean Grey Phoenix. At least the version portrayed by Sophie Turner in 2019's Dark Phoenix. And I put nothing more than she killed his girlfriend. The end.
Everybody was beefing with Jean Grey, man.
Oh, yeah,
I just feel like everybody is just like...
It's like what you said in the last episode.
Yeah.
Redheads are crazy. Jean Grey is psychotic.
Yeah, like at some point, like it's Jean Grey versus everybody. That's what I've gotten
from
the last two trilogies.
Yeah.
That's all I've gotten.
She's Omega level.
Yeah.
Did you get with Omegas, man?
Yeah, like I remember seeing X-Men The Last Stand. I've said this before in other episodes.
Yeah.
I was just like, my memory of X-Men The Last Stand was just being the most chaotic.
Jean!
just the most chaotic movie. Yeah. And it's everybody against Jean Grey because... Yeah. She's just so telepathically like absurd.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Jean!
I love it especially because you can just see the face that goes along with the tone.
No, Jean!
Jean!
No.
Yeah.
And then Dark Phoenix, and it's like,
yep.
Just killing everybody. Yep. I mean, sure.
Exactly.
Why not?
Spare.
I can't wait to see who plays her in
the films.
In MCU.
It's going to be a big shoes to fill, but at the same time, like, not really. Like, I just hope they do it well. I hope they pick somebody that can really do it and isn't just an it girl.
Like, what if they just took the X-Men 97 and just made it a live action and that's the live action MCU?
That'd be wild.
Because I like those stories and those stories are.
They're amazing.
I mean, those these first two episodes, and I feel like they're very true to the comics.
Yes, they are.
So, like, show our boy Scott Summers some love, you know?
Scott! I love Scott! I love
show him some
so
love
much.
In the live action films. Like, Wolvie's.
Yeah.
He's phasing out. He's doing one last hoorah.
Yeah.
You know, and cool.
Yeah.
But let's, you know, where we at?
We'll see. Oh, the future looks so good for X-Men. I can't wait. So, speaking of the future, or at least other versions of it, other versions and in other media for Hank. So, we could quite literally talk about every single nuance of this subsection that we have, which are usually, I like to stay within the variants, the video games, animation, or others.
Yeah.
And so I was like, dude, we could literally talk about each one, but I'm going to keep it to variants and animation for very good reasons. So there is a, first up, there is a variant, Beast of Earth 295, otherwise known as Dark Beast of the infamous Age of Apocalypse. So this beast was particularly notable due to his dark nature, as the name suggests, and in a world without Charles Xavier, it just didn't bode well for Hank McCoy. He got very distraught and disgruntled and just didn't believe in the future that Charles Xavier had instilled in all of his original students. And so Dark Beast is a sadistic genius in the alternate reality. Hank didn't hold back when it came to twisted experiments in genetics involving fellow mutants, and he even dabbled in a little murder.
Dabbled? Okay. He was just as like, one does, like, yeah. it's like some salt in a baking dish.
Just
dabble a little salt in there.
Exactly. He dabbled in it. You know, he was like, oh, you know, I haven't killed a person in about 30 days.
Sure. Yeah, like, you're going to, like, oh, if I don't kill a person, I'm going to lose my subscription card.
Exactly.
Jeez.
Yeah, they made him very maniacal. And so, in a similar vein, the more recent Earth 616 arcs, so we're talking, like, last summer, they were depicting a much darker beast who strayed from his usually, like, altruistic belief system in favor of what he believes in as an individual for the greater good. He even murdered Wolverine.
Damn, that's possible.
Right. Well, you have to remember, yeah, this latest version of X-Men, at least when Jonathan Hickman and his legacy was concerned, is that he created them as immortals. They were able to be rebooted and reborn from these, you know, using the Krakoan ways and all this good stuff. But he murdered Wolverine he murdered Wolverine for interfering in his plans. Wolverine was resurrected, as they do, and then Beast had clones of himself to help him in his quest to dominate, like, his big plans of just deviating from this, you know, unrealistic dream of humanity and mutant kind coexisting in a weird way. And so there was a big battle, the clones perished, but Beast himself survived, and he fled. His whereabouts are currently unknown. So there is this possibility and dialogue that the corrupted Beast, if you will, wasn't uploaded to the Krakoan mutant system. So if he dies and comes back, or the resurrected Beast that he might be now, hopefully he's the good one that everybody loves. But that's where he is in the comics right now. It's kind of crazy. And then on the other side of the spectrum, the animation version. Once again, we would be remiss to not mention one of the most iconic performances in the character's lifetime in pop culture, X-Men 92 and 97, yep, where he's voiced by the amazing George Buzza. And he himself has also had his fair share of screen time and stories, some original, others derived from the comics. But fun fact, George has also made an on-screen cameo. Do you remember this?
Oh, no.
So do you remember in X-Men 1, Rogue flees from the mansion and she's trying to get a hitchhike and she's like...
Oh, that's him?
A bus driver gets her.
Yeah.
That's George Buzza.
Oh my gosh.
That's the OG Beast. And yeah, he's the trucker that gave Rogue a ride while she was hitchhiking.
Love that.
Love it. And I think I did my binge a while ago.
Yeah.
But isn't that the part where, like, Sabretooth, they put the log in the road and he, yep, like, yeah.
Okay. I just started rewatching that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't finished it yet, but.
Yeah. George Buzza. Yeah. You got to rewind it a little, because his natural voice is very beast-like.
Ah, okay.
He does. He doesn't have the same sort of super, super duper smooth, like butter, like peacefulness to him, but you can hear it very, very easily. Yeah, he's just phenomenal. I absolutely adore him as well. And then almost was. So I honestly didn't think I was going to find anything. I was like, maybe not. But there was actually an actor by the name of Benjamin Walker who had apparently bagged the role for the new wave of films, beginning with First Class. However, he was unable to commit due to a scheduling conflict with a stage show he had already signed on for. So while Nicholas Hoult got the role after the fact, we did get to see Benjamin emerge in the MCU in some form. And you probably don't know this because you didn't see Jessica Jones season 3.
I did not.
But there is this character by the name of Eric Gelden, a mysterious new character. And he became a somewhat love interest for Jessica in the third season.
Yeah.
I quite liked him. I liked him a lot because he was... You couldn't quite trust him. He was kind of like a gray area character where you're like, is he gonna like deceive her? Like, is he gonna flip on her or what? And he wasn't super duper trustworthy, but they got along swimmingly. And I don't know if you remember this film. He was also in a film that I hate to admit I enjoyed. Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Oh my God. Yeah, I remember that.
That's the guy. Wow. That's the guy. So he was Beast, but he couldn't do it. Damn. So then we got Nicholas Hoult. Yeah, he would have been great, I think. He would have been, he kind of gave a very different look to him, at least as a human. But I would think I would have enjoyed him as Beast. But
sure.
It's okay. But yeah, maybe in another life. So, future of the character in the MCU, Jeff, any immediate thoughts far as where we left off with him?
I mean, yeah, like we said, we just seen him in the Marvels, I guess the most at now. I don't think he'll ever get his own, like, solo thing.
Nah, never.
No?
No.
He's always a team player. He's always part of the team. I mean, obviously, sure. He's in the X-Men 97.
Yeah.
You know, that's his own thing.
Mm-hmm.
The next time we'll probably see him, if that...
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a huge there's a high possibility like he shows up in some form in Deadpool and Wolverine.
God, I hope so.
But as for like continuing
mm-hmm.
reoccurrences of the character,
mm-hmm.
maybe possibly not until like the core X-Men are ever established.
Yeah.
And right now we only have, you know, as of right now, technically just the Fantastic Four.
Yeah,
like of that side of things.
Mm-hmm.
So like that, those guys need to get established.
Yeah,
and then you can get into the if we want to have if MCU wants to have their own Charles Xavier mm-hmm. and all those guys.
Yeah.
Because Stewart,
mm-hmm.
they're still here,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, does the studio want them to go exactly. through that again? Like, and even do the fans, do they want to see that again? Exactly. Some do, don't get me wrong, but
yeah, for sure.
You also just have to be like, look.
Yeah.
Like the next time an X-Men movie might come out
exactly.
could be 2027.
Exactly.
If that.
Yeah, I was going to say 26 seems early.
Yeah.
Like, because there's already
things planned
realistic.
Out for 2026 and 2025.
Yep.
So maybe.
Right.
2027.
Right. Well, it's the same kind of dialogue that I have with people who are like, give Toby Spider-Man 4. I'm like, guys, Toby is almost 50 years old.
Yeah.
Like, he is not that guy that you remember from Spider-Man 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
And I remember very distinctly, I don't know if I said this in the episode, but even in No Way Home, in one of the screenings of like 8 that I went to, like when he popped up on screen, like some kid was like, he looks old. I was
he
like,
does.
Oh,
I mean, he kinda,
but he did because he looks his age.
But it's also like a realistic point of view. Like absolutely. Imagine you're Peter Parker and you just grow up and you're like, are you still going to do Spidey stuff?
Exactly.
Like, I think you're 35, 40, like, like, damn, I'm still like superhuman though. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like my back.
Yeah,
my back.
It's my back. It's Peter B. Parker. It's all of that, and so the same would go. It would be for Sir Patz and Ian McKellen. It's kind of like, they're like what 92.
They're
up there.
They're up there.
So let the man rest.
Yeah. Like, let him leave his legacy the way he did.
Exactly. It'd be amazing to get something, but they it's don't just, need
but
to
it's
do.
Also like, those. That's it's hard.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's hard. Like, even like McAvoy is like,
yeah,
was good.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
But I would love to see Hank with the Fab Five proper at least once on screen, even if he is of the mentor role and like everybody else is like doing their own thing. But I would like to see them because we've never had them in that proper form. Never. It's always been Cyclops and Jean and then variables. So to get Fab Five, like straight up, like, oh,
To
me, my X-Men. what
if you heard that in live action?
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Now that they don't need the Avengers assemble
I'm
going to
say,
line,
is that like a...
I'm telling you, I told you.
Yeah, you did.
It's the same gravity, so I'm waiting for it. But it ooh, it's so good. It's going to be hard to top the 97 version, but...
That's true.
It's going to be good. Yeah. No, I'm excited. But yeah, I do think he'll take on a mentor role where he could be training somebody else or just the school. Like he kind of was with Nicholas Holt. He stopped being a student so much and more of a mentor. So yeah, I'd like that. But he doesn't have to be everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
Just pop in every now and then. I would like to see him with Mr. Fantastic. He could be with Doctor Strange. I don't care.
Yeah,
whatever.
What if he's consulted? But yeah.
Yeah, be amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Hell, he would even fit with like Peter Parker. He could be like a, you know, Professor Hank McCoy. So bring it. So last but not least, suggested reading. So I actually cobbled this together just before we started recording because I wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. There's so many great stories, but I did narrow it down to those classic stories I mentioned and have mentioned throughout the episode. The X-Men 49 through 53 at the very back end of the issue, of each issue, detailing Hank's origin stories. The issues collected in the Beauty and the Beast collection.
Nice.
Like I said, there's a storyline and there was an episode of 92 by the same title, different stories. But that collection is by team Jim Shooter, Ann Nocenti, Jim McCann, Frank Springer, and Don Perlin, which chronicles the time where Dazzler was outed as a mutant and her career and life were never the same. But Hank steps in, tries to save the day. They actually get together for a bit. It's very interesting. X-Men 92, you've heard this before. I'll keep saying it till I die. There's nothing more to say on that. And then last but not least, Amazing Adventures number 11, where Hank becomes his furriest self yet.
Love that.
Yes. And gray. And with that, my dear friends, is the end of the show. Thanks for listening. Our next episode. So it's time for another mini Marvel. We'll be discussing a bit of the latest topics. But yes, like I think we're going to skew it's real heavy much. On X-Men 97. Like it's on.
It's pretty much mostly that. And if any other trailers release or something, whatever.
Which could happen.
Maybe could possibly because it'll be April already by the time we record that. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going to be a good time.
Oh, yeah.
So join us in a couple of weeks from now for that. And finally, a thank you to all of our Patreon supporters and a special We Are Groot salute to Edgar, Andrea, Ashley, Ariel, Andrew, Tyler, Melanie, Joe, Liz, Robin, Ed, Laura, Eve, Jenny, Chris, Nats, Katie, and Sherry. Woo! It never gets easier. And if you like what you hear, please follow us on social at STRKCNTRST. And don't forget to review, rate, and subscribe.
Once again, thanks for listening, and we will catch y'all in the next one.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Mutants! Yes, I am. Perhaps you self-appointed social engineers don't realize the crucial role mutation plays in species evolution.
Get him!
I'm sorry, gentlemen. Your anger at the inexorable alienation of late 20th century life is sadly misdirected.